if this was a conventional war, like Iraq was effectively a U.S. powerful conventional military operation against Iraq, a conventional military, and the U.S. has overwhelming force and the balance of force and resources are overwhelmingly in favor of the United States. But that's not the war we're fighting here. This is totally different. Iran is fighting a completely unconventional, by traditional conventional standards, they're fighting a completely different asymmetric type of war. So how do you measure success? Pete Hegseth thinks you're going to measure it by how many missile launchers you've taken out, how many F-14 Tomcats, you know, 1972 fighter jets that Iran had on the tarmac, and how many whatever naval boats. And Donald Trump is boasting about the statistics and all of that. But that's not necessarily going to translate into automatic victory by sheer nature of the fact that Iran is now at their 70th missile barrage waves, 70 missile barrage waves, and they're still sending them. They might claim that they're not sending as many, but they're still coming. And that's not to say that we have seen the totality of Iran's military capabilities yet, because we haven't. Likewise, the United States has not shown all of its military capabilities for the damage it can inflict on the Iranians. So on both sides, it is still a chess match there, but you can't measure this by traditional military metrics in terms of what's a success, what's a victory. They think that they can just degrade and destroy, and that that's somehow going to translate into victory. Back to our original point, Daniel, what's the political end state for degrade and destroy? Does that mean the war is going to end, or are you actually motivating Iran to dig in deeper, and you're increasing solidarity and resilience in Iranian society and through the military ranks? And I might throw one last thing in, Daniel. What do you think recruitment is like right now in the IRGC in Iran? I think they're probably having trouble processing the amount of applications. So if they go to fully mobilize, I don't think Iran's going to have a problem mobilizing another 500,000. I don't think it's going to be a problem for them. Do you think America can mobilize another 100,000 to fight this unpopular illegal war? I doubt it.
Yeah. No, in fact, if you look at the approval ratings and you look at the polling here, 61% disapprove of this war, as you can see on the bottom part of that call-out box there. So if that's where we are at the less than 4 week mark, probably not going to get a lot of that. But let me show you something. I got some breaking news for you here. This was sent to me by Larry Johnson, who's going to be on our show this afternoon. But he said, I asked him before we're showing this if he was able to validate it. He said he has been able to. I'll just caveat this by saying we haven't been able to independently validate this yet. We're going to continue to track this down. But because Larry said that someone has validated this, I'm going to show it to you. This is reportedly the Gerald R. Ford from the rear side here. We claim that it left the battle area because of a fire in the laundry room or something like that that burned for a couple of days. And then now here you say there is physical attack damage on the back of the ship, which matches what the IRGC claimed that they did earlier on, that they said that they hit it with a ballistic missile. Now, I can't confirm any of this yet. I think there were some wounded in action that have been reported from the ship. We're going to continue to follow that. But you talk about something that could be a morale boost for the Iranian side. If that is validated, and if that is, I can only imagine it's going to hit the airwaves here pretty soon, and it's going to go all over social media, because that'll be a major, major humiliation for the United States. How do you see it?
Yeah, we saw a similar thing with the military campaign against Yemen, which was waged over the course of a couple of months there. Massive underreporting on U.S. aircraft losses. And there's also some debate and discussion over what caused the loss of some of those aircrafts against Yemen. They say it was an aircraft carrier trying to make a sharp maneuver. Was it making an evasive maneuver to avoid a Yemeni anti-ship missile? Was there any contact? We don't know. There's been no independent survey of the damage there or an investigation into what caused that. We just have to take the word of the Department of Defense at that time, still the Department of Defense. And I think you have the same thing here. The U.S., Donald Trump could not withstand the political fallout from, you know, image of one U.S. ship smoking in the Indian Ocean or one F-35 crashing into a fireball. I mean, he couldn't withstand the political pressure, because the line that the White House is pushing on the American people is, it's a perfect war, typical Trump. It's a perfect war. This has been perfect. Pete, you've done a great job there. There's nothing left. They don't have a country anymore, says Trump. They don't have any leadership. They're just not even functioning as a country. That's not true. And likewise, if you count up the U.S. losses in drones and aircraft in this conflict, it's only been 4 weeks, Daniel. I believe in any specific conflict or exchange or hostilities, the U.S. has lost more of its air assets, and that's not counting all the military assets that have been damaged or destroyed in the Gulf from Iran missile salvos. So, I mean, record losses for the United States in just 4 weeks. There's nothing to compare it to. I mean, what normally that you'd get fired, wouldn't you, as a Secretary of Defense?
Right. Yeah. And let me just add to that. There's also the official reports is that 13 Americans have been killed so far. 241, I think, was the last official number I've seen of wounded. That number continues to go up there. $200 billion in supplemental that's going to be requested here, around $2 billion today. We're burning through. I just showed you 11,000 missiles of various kinds have already been gone through. Our inventories just aren't without end. So that's going to be a problem. But let me show you a couple of other problems. Let me shift gears a little bit. That's putting even more pressure on President Trump, not even just on the military front, and that is on the economic front. We have this report out this morning from the Jeff Currie, who's the chief strategy officer at Carlisle Energy. And he said it's going to be a real shortage. We're talking about the biggest supply disruption the world has ever seen. This is the biggest disruption of both 1973 and 1979 combined. The physical market is really going to bite sometime in the next couple of weeks, he said. Now, let me show you why that's important, because here's a snapshot from this morning of the price of oil, and you see a couple of things on there. You see President Trump, the oil was rolling up over $100 a barrel, and then he claimed on Monday morning at 7:23 a.m. that, you know what, forget about this ultimatum that I had. We'll give you five more days on that. That immediately had this huge plunge you see on the left. And then last night after the market, that was released anyway, that there was a 15-point plan. So maybe there's actually a chance that we're going to, even the five-day extension won't happen. And you see, again, the market immediately reacted to it. But what what's his name? Jeff Currie is saying here that you can talk your way out of some of this stuff for a while, but then the physical market is at some point, because the oil is just not getting out. So at some point, you can't talk your way into lower oil prices, and it's going to start to have a problem. What are your concerns about how that's going to play out here if we don't do anything to get this over with in the near term?
Well, you've got the realities of the market, and then you've got this kind of opportunism here, and the Financial Times and others reporting that massive bets were placed. So call options put in before Trump's announcement on True Social. I mean, that's not even through official government channels. You have to remember that's a social media platform owned by Donald Trump, owned by the president. That should be a scandal in itself. And then all of a sudden you see all this, oil prices drop and, market cap shoots up on the S&P 500. And then 2 hours later, the Iranians say, no, we're not talking to Trump about any of this. And all of a sudden you see the reversal, oil goes back up again, and then the market crashes. And now, the evidence suggests strongly that Trump insiders would have knowledge of his announcements, have made money on the surge, made money on the dip, and probably made money on the rebound. And this is just an ongoing cycle of opportunism. So they can just do this game and then just make money just intermittently along the process of this. And the United States isn't in a rush, because look, when Trump said, you have 48 hours, otherwise we're going to bomb your power plants, all that was just a cover for another Israeli attack, because Israel went straight in to do it themselves. And then the U.S. can just play a good cop and say, oh, we didn't know what Netanyahu was going to do there. So the whole shtick is getting old. The Iranians aren't falling for it, but the American people are falling for it. The markets are falling for it. That's the difference.
Well, but they're falling for it now. But I mean, what isn't fluctuating is the price of gasoline here that all of these folks are paying. Because while you have big market fluctuations, the gasoline price goes up and it stays up. In fact, when you hit the next spike, it just goes up a little higher, but it doesn't rebound that way. So people are paying higher prices at the pump already. So the question is, and I've got something else to shift over here in just a second, but what are your concerns about how much pressure this is going to put on the Trump if this starts to go beyond, you know, 4 weeks, 5 weeks, 6 weeks, 2 months, et cetera, and that price doesn't come down? In fact, it continues to go up.
No, there's constant inflationary pressure. This is also basically going to put the kibosh on any potential rate cuts. You know, there's this war between the Federal Reserve and the Trump administration about interest rates and Jerome Powell. So, you know, what are you going to do? What are you going to do now? Like, open this spigot even more with the Fed? And that's not going to happen. They're already asking, as you said, Daniel, for $200 billion in supplementals after announcing they want to up the military budget by $1 to $1.5 trillion. So, like, what is this going to do? It's just going to create inflation for the American people. We pay that in inflation tax. Americans pay the bill, but who makes the money? The oil and gas sector in the U.S. is profiting from the shortage of supply in the global market, and specifically the disruption of supplies to Europe, Qatari LNG. We talked about this a month ago. And just in the exact same way the U.S. has taken advantage of the magical sabotage of the Nord Stream pipeline to become the number one supplier of premium-priced U.S. fracked LNG to Northern Europe. They certainly have their eyes on upping production for Europe as well. So that's the real paradigm shift here, is U.S. control and dominance over Europe. That's definitely a takeaway. And so that's Trump's base, Daniel. His base is big oil, big gas, Wall Street, the big AI, that and big defense. That's Trump's base. MAGA is disintegrating. His popular base, as you can see from the polling, is disintegrating. So his base is really the plutocracy, the oligarchy here. The polling is very, very clear. It's going in the wrong direction on every single metric in the run-up to the midterms. He'll never recover any of these constituencies again, because most of these people, including independents, everyone I know who voted for Trump, they probably couldn't stand him and have to hold their nose on so many things. But the fact he ran as an anti-war, anti-regime change war candidate, that's how he got the independent votes.
Yeah,
clearly, that was a single issue decision for a lot of voters that gave him the edge in multiple swing states in a general election. That's not going to happen anymore. They've gone. I know Republicans that are vote. I'm in a red state right now, Daniel. I'm in Arizona. I've met Republicans that are going to register as Democrats in the primaries to basically try to vote out Republican candidates in the primaries because they're so pissed off that they basically put the kibosh on the War Powers Act vote, that the Republican Party has become so pro-war, and that this administration has become so pro-war. There's people willing to change parties in opposition to this war agenda by the Trump administration.
And we hadn't even gotten the worst of it yet. We're still on the very front side of this, and especially if there is a ground operation coming up, some suggest it could be as soon as this weekend, and we start having a lot of casualties. That could change in a hurry.